love the tension between climate and Web3 and this sort of apparent sore history of them not being a natural fit and them being at odds with each other. And I'm a great believer of infiltrate from within. And so if Web3 is the place for community and impact and cash redistribution, then funding the climate movement should be happening there.
Hello and welcome back to the Women of Web3 podcast. I'm Lauren Ingram and I'm the founder of Women of Web3. We're a community and a consultancy, and we've been educating thousands of women about Web3 and sharing jobs, events, and learning resources like this podcast. In every episode, I'll be interviewing an incredible leader about their learnings. We start off by breaking down the Web3 jargon, then we head deeper down the rabbit hole. Please do subscribe and give us a rating. It really helps more people find the podcast. Now, you're probably listening to this podcast because you want to learn about Web3, but have you ever considered how to actually use it in your job? At MDRX, they build digital products using Web3, blockchain, machine learning, and AI, but with purpose as the foundation, never just tech for tech's sake. So why not download their cheat sheet? It's packed with top tips on why your business should give a damn about Web3 and see whether Web3 is actually right for you in your job, your business, or even your career. So whether you're looking to optimize your business strategy or leverage tech to stay ahead of the competition, MDRX have got you covered. I'm really excited to be working with them because they live and breathe Web3, and I love that they see tech as an enabler and not as the end goal. And because they're the tech consultancy arm of law firm Mishkonda Rea Group, they know everything there is to know about the legalities of Web3. And if you've ever tried to launch a legally compliant NFT project, DAO, anything like that, you'll know it's really complex and you need a trusted partner. Go and download their cheat sheet now by clicking on the link in the description. So we're doing a bit of a campaign at the moment to amplify women who are getting promotions and new jobs in Web3, because we love seeing your successes in the space. So if you've just landed a role or you've just seen someone get a great new promotion, do tag Women of Web3 on LinkedIn and we're going to share it because we would love to amplify those wins. Now, our next guest is super interesting. Lydia Pang has been really senior at Refinery29 and Nike, and now she lives in the middle of a forest in Wales in the UK. That's where she runs her creative studio called Morning. She also co-founded a Web3 project called Steward, which brings together a community around the frenemies, which are climate and Web3. So I'm excited to dive into that. She's got some really cool insights to share. I could listen to her all day. So without further ado, here's Lydia. Welcome to the show, Lydia. Can you say who you are and what you do?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm Lydia Pang. I'm the co-founder of Morning, which is a creative strategy studio, and we operate under this mission of it's a new day and the web is a powerful tool for good. I'm also the co-founder of Steward, which is a Web3 climate collective and community built on Celo, with the mission to bridge digital and the natural world. And speaking of natural world, I live in the forest in Wales. And so despite spending my entire career embracing digital communities, I actually live very far away from absolutely everyone.
So you're basically a digital hermit?
Yeah, I am. And I literally live on a tiny farm, and my husband and I grow all our own food and then have excellent Wi-Fi.
Wow, that sounds pretty dreamy. I bet there's actually probably quite a few people that would like the sound of that. So we always kick things off with a bit of a jargon buster. And also, I know you're not necessarily like Web3 native, live and breathe it every single day. You're from a, you know, creative background and stepped into this. But what do we mean by gas fees?
Yeah, I feel like actually I, in its simplest sort of terms, which is the only way I know how to say it, gas fees are the charge for a transaction completed on the blockchain. So how I think of it is almost like you're buying your Beyonce tickets and then you get hit with a transaction or an operational cost fee. So this is that. So it varies from blockchain to blockchain. I know that, but it's basically the fee to transact. So hopefully that's like made it more clear.
Awesome. Thank you. Before we jump into your Web3 project, Steward, I'd love to hear about your career history, because you've done some amazing things. You've gone from being creative director in massive agencies through to Nike, and then you co-founded your creative studio Morning. So do you want to tell me a bit about your story? And also, how did you end up at Nike? And then also, why did you start your own studio?
Yeah, for sure. So I suppose it's probably best to start like right at the beginning. My career very much maps the rise and shifts of like digital. I studied art history, actually, because I had like an obsession with like the power the images held to like shift thought. And I was really interested and very nerdy about like visual communication and the theories behind that and behavioral patterns. So that was my interest point. And then I kind of landed in advertising because I needed a stay in London. I needed money. I needed a job. And I felt like, okay, well, at least I get to be creative and work with brands. I've always loved brands. But that kind of was the beginning of my shapeshifter, hybrid, misfit identity in the industry. And at first that came with a ton of imposter syndrome, like, okay, you're not really a very good designer or strategist. You don't really know this industry. You just kind of have a ton of opinions, which at 21, 22 is like, cute, but you know, really hard to kind of frame and bill against a client and understand. And so I really had to build my kind of authority in that space. I did a lot of editorial writing, a lot of personal projects, and built a set of opinions that became valued and known in the space around culture, around image making, and brands as vehicles for good. And so that has forever been my thing, the thing that I've always chatted about. And so I worked at big ad agencies, always navigating those spaces with that value system in mind, being incredibly mouthy and opinionated, and doing lots of side projects that won me that sort of credibility in the industry, I think, at a young age. And then ended up moving to New York, working for an amazing ad agency, Anomaly. And from there, started to find my voice editorially. And again, speaking to that kind of generalist, misfit sort of identity, I used to write articles, I used to create videos, I used to do set design, like whatever expression or execution that was available to me or interesting to me at the time, I would jump into with kind of fallibility and confidence, because I knew that the foundational thinking behind what I was doing had sort of remained the same. I was always very clear about my why from an early age. God knows why, maybe because I did art history and I was really fluent in like digging into the why. And so from there, I was the creative director of Refinery 29 in New York, which, you know, was a big job for, I was actually 29, funnily enough, at the time. So I was young and I took on this big job. It was an amazing place where kind of mission and money met. Like it was obviously a media company, but we had to work with brands and we had to figure out how to do that on behalf of the community that we were building and speaking to. And I really enjoyed that problem, that challenge of trying to figure out how to make brands serve the community. So I was creative director there for many years and then eventually headed over to Nike. And to answer your question, I wasn't sure. You know, Refinery 29 was like home to me. It was gender equity and community building and digital media. It was like all of my stuff in one job. And I was incredibly happy and fulfilled. But Nike felt like something different. You know, I wanted to be triple threat. I wanted to have done agency, media, and brand. I've always been quite strategic about my career. But also, I felt like Nike intimidated me. It felt big. It felt like they were already mission-driven. They have an enormous amount of power. And I wanted to help them figure out ultimately how to speak to the female consumer. I wasn't sure if that's what they wanted from me. So I attended the interview nonetheless, just to go and see what it was like, and was actually really impressed by their appetite for change. You know, the interview, I was very much myself, probably too much. I was just like, this is what I'm about, like it or lump it kind of vibe. And I remember somebody in the interview actually saying, you seem very passionate about image making and gender equity as always, but do you care about sport? And actually my answer back was like so brutally honest. I was like, not really. But I feel like there are so many people at this company that do deeply. Actually, you need my point of view. You need the perspective that I have, which is I understand the female consumer, I understand digital culture, and that consumer isn't interested in sport at all. And there's a meeting place between sport and lifestyle. And so that was kind of my sell, I suppose. And so I got that job and I worked there for a few years and I absolutely loved it. But quickly learned the power of my role there was this infiltrate from within spirit, like troublemaking, saying the unsayable in a room, pushing ideas. And then from that, I kind of met my co-founder, Sam, there. He was the creative director over social. And we kind of bonded over our love of like the ethics of making and brands as vehicles for good, and decided that we should leave and set up our own thing so that we could do that with lots of brands.
That's amazing. And also well done for just kind of ramming all of that into like quite a short story. I'm interested to know a bit about what the culture is like at Nike. So you say you came in as someone that like wasn't necessarily interested in sports, but understand lifestyle and understand the female consumer. So what was that like? And yeah, what was the culture like there?
I mean, it's such a huge legacy brand with such deep roots in mission. And I think that was one of the reasons why I really wanted to go there actually, was that Nike really is like at the forefront of mission marketing. And that was something that was always really interesting to me. I just had never put words to it before. And actually, you know, it is true. Like Nike, you know, you're in Portland, in Beaverton, surrounded by trees, in the middle of nowhere. And there's this gorgeous perspective that comes from being there, because everyone is there and has moved across the globe because it's Nike, because they're the best, and because they are often the best at what they do. And so I've never been surrounded by such talent, honestly, and such drive. And there's a feeling of like infinite potential. I think there's that athlete mindset there where, like, you know, anything can be achieved, which is also the abundance of that is really addictive to be around. So I love that. And then I think also like what struck me was the huge appetite for agility and change and responsibility that Nike had truly inside the bones of what they were doing. And I found that really exciting. And actually that's what pushed me. Sad for them, but that's what pushed me to leave, because I was like, well, if Nike can do this and they have the appetite to do this type of disruptive work and actually like take responsibility and help communities, then I can like apply those frameworks and I can push other companies to do the same. And it was that feeling of, oh, I can scale this, what I do here, I can do for lots of big brands, that made me feel excited about starting my own thing. And, you know, a lot of the value system of my company, Morning, was built off that experience. You know, we are, you know, our kind of mantra and mission is be less shit, which is all about incremental daily change, not like big brands as lighthouses, we'll save the world type promise, but just every day a little bit less shit. Just feels doable. And I love that idea of like an incremental commitment. We also, something else we talk about a lot Morning is this idea of intellectual mischief, good trouble, being like digital optimists in the hellscape that we call home online. And I think a lot of those values were really built from my experience at Nike and realizing the potential that we have with these brands to do real world good, just a little, but still real world good. So yeah, my experience there was really positive and actually incredibly formative to what my company then became.
How long ago did you launch Morning?
2 years, actually 2.5 years now.
Amazing. What kind of clients have you worked with?
Oh, everyone. So of course, as soon as we left, we took Nike as our first client. So we've been working with Nike, you know, forever. We work a lot with Jordan Brand. We work with Snapchat, Coca-Cola, Meta, Hinge. We work with all the biggest and the ones with the most appetite to shift culture. That is kind of like the filter. And I think that's why we've been incredibly commercially successful, because we've landed on a value system that's unshakable, but we're able to speak to these big corporate clients and brands about how sort of creativity and commerce, mission and money can sit happily next to each other. And I think there's always been this friction, or we've sort of papered over it. But I think transparency, and as we start to think about Web3, and I know that's where this conversation is going to go, is that transparency and that candor, I think, is like a really exciting sort of gear shift for brands. And I think Web3 has like called in a lot of that type of thinking.
So I'm going to ask you one more question about Morning, just because I'm enjoying hearing about it. I know you just called it a creative studio, but what does that actually mean? Like, what do you make? What do you deliver?
Good question. So we just do creative strategy. So we sit at the intersection between strategy and creative direction and like help those two disciplines talk. But we sell things like culture audits, trend reports, creative strategy, narrative strategy. We sit very like top of funnel in that sense. And so we have like deep connection with culture, community, digital, and then we formulate that for brands. So helping them solve business challenges with culture solutions, I suppose, but inherently creative strategy, which is sexy keynotes.
Sexy keynotes. Okay, so that's what you sell, is sexy keynotes. I really like that. And actually, all of that stuff does connect really well with Web3. I can understand why it might have been interesting to you in the first place, especially that sort of community and building culture digitally. What's been your sort of journey into Web3 and how you've started Steward, and also what that is?
Yeah, as you said, I've always been really interested in digital communities and human behavior. And I've always kind of lived and created online. It's like a huge part of my identity as a creative person. I met my husband on MySpace 18 years ago. I focused my whole career on whatever the edge of creativity and digital culture was. And actually Sophia, who is one of the co-founders of Steward, we've been friends for many years, and we've always pushed each other to kind of brainstorm about what's next and pushed each other to explore new spaces. And so the kind of light bulb moment for Steward and why we decided to take on a project like that, it was actually a few years ago now. We were sat having a conversation. We were in London having like a girls' cozy weekend, watching like the Blackpink documentary. And of course, we ended up like pausing everything that we were doing and being like, why don't we get Web3? Like, it was like irritating to us that we didn't understand it. Unacceptable to us because we're both very type A and we love to understand everything. And we've built our careers on digital. And so I think we both felt, yeah, that it was unacceptable to us that we didn't understand it. We tried to and failed. And so we decided to make a pact and to learn together and be each other's sort of Web3 gym buddies. So we would send podcasts and articles, and we started to have like Zoom calls and meet people in the space and ask them really dumb questions and try and make like head or tail of it with no output or product in mind. We just purely wanted to understand. And then actually we reached this juncture where we realized that the only way to actually understand a space is to like touch it and make inside of it. And so we decided to do Steward because we knew that, you know, if we made mistakes and failed and pulled in the community, it would allow us to truly understand by experimenting ourselves, basically.
So what is Steward? And like, is it launched already? And what, like, where are you up to?
Yeah. So Steward is first and foremost a global climate community. So we call ourselves like Climate 3.0. And I think seemingly frenemies, climate and Web3 as a dialogue, we felt needed a home and a voice and a kind of network. So we kind of aim to be the largest collective for climate optimists around the world. And our mission is to leverage Web3 for good and reframe the mistakes of Web2. So our ultimate goal is to redistribute cash to climate organizations through the sales of dynamic digital art. So we've been going for about a year. We're kind of like an online collective. We've done events, but we're about to head into, in a few weeks, our first mint wave. And so I can tell you a little bit about that and the digital art. So we shaped it around the 8 natural ecosystems. So we paired 8 global artists who depicted these ecosystems and had like a natural connection to them or a relationship with them. That was so fun, by the way, having spent my whole career like commissioning artists and being close to the creation of images. It was really fun to think about how these 8 natural ecosystems could be depicted and who was going to do it and why and what was their story and how could the artwork, the digital art, really be imbued with their relationship with the natural ecosystem, especially given that friction between, you know, NFTs and digital art feeling so transient and low in craft. It felt like a real opportunity to, like, you know, bring some artists that perhaps use paint as a medium into the space and help explain to them how to do it. So the artwork is dynamic. So it responds to climate data in the ecosystem coordinates that are set. So, for example, when it rains in the forest, your forest digital art will also rain. And we love this tension between like climate and Web3. I feel like it has a really sore history of not being a natural fit conceptually and philosophically, obviously. But I'm a great believer, as you heard from my kind of career, of this like infiltrate from within spirit. And so I think if Web3 is the place for community and impact, and I think cash redistribution, then funding the climate movement should be happening there. And so that's kind of how we landed on it. We were like, these are seemingly at odds as spaces. What an interesting friction, like what a strange tension. How can they be friends? How can they help each other? How can we use digital art to deepen connection to nature? And how can we leverage Web3 tech to redistribute cash to NGOs, directly to climate NGOs? So yeah, it's so fun to have a project be born out of a friction, I think, but it obviously hasn't come without challenges. It's been really hard, this project. Hardest project I've ever worked on, because I've had to learn every day. And as a person, I love to be good at stuff. And generally I will deepen wherever I feel like I'm already achieving. And actually Steward has been like just a constant space where I've been had to be very fallible, very vulnerable and learn every day. So it's been a beautiful experience for that alone, because, you know, I believe in the potential for web for good, but it's been amazing to teach myself a lesson about creative leadership. And, you know, I'm 35 next month. It's nice to feel like I'm still at a space where I can like make mistakes, or I can like learn, or I can have projects that I don't have to like nail or get right first time. And Steward has definitely been that, like an experimentation bed for us all to learn and figure it out. So in essence, Steward, the purpose of it is to fund the climate movement through digital art. And we're building all of that on a carbon negative chain, Cello. And they've been our partner in the mission since the very, very beginning. And yeah, we've recently started hosting events for our steward community, which has been really fun. Like we did foraging on the outskirts of New York. We did beach yoga in San Francisco and beach cleanups. And we're doing a supper club in a couple of weeks to celebrate our very first mint wave, which I'm nervous about. I've never had like a ribbon cut moment like that on a project before, you know? So I'm excited, but I'm also nervous.
Yeah, I can completely understand that. Kind of putting something on the blockchain, the kind of the permanence of it is a bit daunting.
It is, exactly. And I feel like Web2 expressions, which I've always worked with in my career, have a transience and an ease, and you can hide inside them. You know, there are so many reasons why things might not be successful from a metric perspective, but this is like black and white. Like people are either interested in being part of the community and they want to, you know, fund the climate movement and they want a piece of digital art in exchange, or they don't. And that I find like thrilling and like terrifying. And I think what's been really beautiful about Steward is the whole time we've all been, the three founders and now the people that work with Steward, have all been very open about the journey and figuring it out as we go. But this is a very definite date where we're going to ask the community to like show up now and contribute to the climate movement. And as the person that was in charge of the creative output, I think I feel a real tiger mom vibe around the artists and the art being as well received as all the effort that went into it. Because, you know, it shocked me that the process, like working with the tech partners to implement all the different features, like, you know, we thought about the biodiversity of the different ecosystems and depicted different animals and volume of animal relates to rarity. So we've tried at every juncture to think about really beautiful artistic nuances that link the relationship with Web3 and, as everyone knows, appreciation and gaining, which I feel like is the bad rep, with nature, you know, thinking about biodiversity and connection to the weather. So it's been something I've really poured my like heart into, and I really want it to land.
I'm not surprised. It sounds, yeah, like an amazing kind of labor of love, but then also, you know, but it's also real, you know, it's also like a business, a community. So it sounds like you've had all these amazing learnings with Steward, and that like, and it's actually been quite hard. And I think that's probably a lot of people's experience with Web3 is just like, oh my God, it's sort of never ending, but that's sort of what's a little bit addictive about it, of like, I just want to understand this stuff better, get under the skin of it, make it good, and kind of get past the hard bits. So what have been maybe your either biggest learnings or maybe the kind of hardest part in terms of that learning journey with Steward?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing that I've had to overcome in the project, but also has been so instrumental to my creative growth, is that it's fully okay to publicly not really know what you're doing. And I feel like I've never really been all right with that before. I've always put quite a lot of pressure on myself in my career to appear optically like I really know my shit. I run a company morning and I work with big clients. I always feel the need to be incredibly buttoned. But actually, Steward has been a really beautiful place for me to be really fallible and sort of childlike in my discovery, which I've actually found in the end really soothing and really healing. So the learning by doing, I think, has been an amazing like lesson. I've also learned that it takes a village. Like Web3 projects, like it really is like, you really need to be comfortable and good at like collaborating and pulling people in. It's like, you can't be an island. It can't be an ego-centered output. It's really about like the collective, of course, by nature of Web3. I think that makes sense. But logistically, pulling Steward off and getting to where we are now has taken a village. And it's been amazing to like have all of our partners with us along the way. I mean, you know, we literally built our own marketplace, worked with coders to find that, to figure out the, you know, how to do dynamic art. We like dreamt up naively, oh my God, wouldn't it be cool if it rained when it's raining? Like that was something that we just like brainstormed. And actually our like gorgeous naivety of the space, I think, has made the project a lot richer, because we had no like barriers of what was possible. And so we asked questions where I feel like some of our tech partners were like, okay, technically yes, but I don't know. And, you know, and Sophia has this incredible resilience of like, well, if it's possible in any small way, let's figure it out. And so I felt like that was a really amazing experience, honestly. Something else I've learned is that education spaces like this, honestly, podcasts like this, are like so key to being part of the community, but also launching these types of projects. Like, you know, a big challenge with Stuart has been figuring out, okay, we've got to like make people give a shit about climate. That's hard. We all know that. We need to make people understand and give a shit about Web3. Okay, that's hard, especially now. So it was, there's layers of education that have been really hard to unpack. So that's been an interesting challenge. But yeah, I think it all comes down to like that fallibility element. I think that's been like the greatest learning and also the greatest strengths of the project.
All very much a sort of uphill battle to an extent. I quite like that what you were saying about the gorgeous naivety that maybe because you're like not from a sort of blockchain development background, why would you think that something could or couldn't be done? You're thinking about it sort of creatively of like, I would love to see this, or, you know, love this to be the case. I can so imagine that people sort of coming back to you and be like, we can try. But I also really like how that's, and I guess maybe this is also connected to that sort of creative point, you're like really going for that excellence of that kind of like the best it can possibly be, rather than the kind of more like tech startup version, which is just kind of like, you know, minimum viable product. Let's just like get something out the door. There's sort of, and I know you talked about that sort of fallibility, but it sounds like you weren't willing to sort of get rid of that kind of creative excellence.
Yeah. I'm glad you touched on that actually, because that was something that we considered up front. Like, to your point, we were at the beginning, we were like, MVP, get it out, figure it out. What's the appetite? Like, test and learn. We'll keep building as we go. And actually we decided that felt at odds with our mission of like, you know, rewilding the self, the consciousness, you know, slow growth, content pollution as enemy, NFT hype as enemy. Like, how can this project be like purposely encourage patience and a sensitivity and a respect for both the technology and the climate in a way that mirrors seasons? Not to be too poetic, but it felt like that was an important tone to establish in the project, in opposition to a lot of other projects, very many projects that have tried to do similar things. And so I think in that sense, it was a risk, because obviously everyone loves the like hypey, droppy, like sexy, like we're not that. It's a dialogue, and it's a lesson, and it's a relationship with both the web free and its potential and climate. And I think that slower pace has, yeah, allowed for that craft excellence, but I think hopefully has also built a little bit of like trust and authority that we're not just trying to make a buck, like, or get some like nice PR around this so we can all get on with our jobs. Like, we think that this is an exciting dialogue to be having.
Totally. And I think you're probably the only person on this podcast that's advocated for a slower pace, and yeah, I'm into it. So where do you see things maybe going next? I know you mentioned briefly that it's kind of harder to get people excited about Web3 right now. You know, there's kind of like funny sentiment around Web3 and also the kind of excitement about AI, understandably, which I to some extent do actually lump in with Web3 in terms of being like the next like phase of how we interact online. It's yeah, AI dominates that. But what maybe trends are you finding interesting, or what are you maybe excited about in this space, or even something that people maybe haven't noticed that you've noticed that you think people should take notice of?
Yeah, I think, as I said, I'm kind of like a digital optimist. So I feel I've never been more excited about the space. And I think that's probably because we've just gone through a big, ugly purge. So like crypto bros, RIP, NFT hype, RIP, like everyone is so shady about Web3 now. And I feel like all of that doubt and that mistrust, I think, is a healthy purge. You know, as ever, we mess it up as humans. We like mirrored our vice and our ugly onto something that has a potential for greatness. But I'm glad that we got it out of the way quick. So now we're able to start thinking in a rebirth sense around like the true fundamental values of Web3 and what it can actually do. And I think when we come back to like the baseline of its ability, and you think about, you know, decentralized systems or skill and resource sharing and equity and fairness, things that we've grappled with as these kind of abstract topics in Web2, I feel like now can be have this like rigidity and have these like receipts. And so I feel really excited about that. I also feel really excited about the rise and respect of niche and nerdy communities. My husband and I love mushroom foraging and are obsessed with all of the communities around that, and identification and these like funny little pockets and corners of the internet that feel very web one. I'm really aging myself, but they feel very Web 1 in how deeply nerdy they are. And I think that with Web 2 feeling so watered down and mass and blanket, I love the potency that we're seeing in some of the Web 3 communities. I think that's really exciting. I'm also really excited about more people coming into the space with differing perspectives. I think Steward's a good example of that. All of us are like, you know, women of color from different backgrounds that are not Web3, trying to figure it out. Like, that's exciting that these like differing experience sets and perspectives are coming in with diverse thought and experimenting with the naivety I mentioned. And I think more of that like abundance and naivety is what I'm hoping that we'll see. And then obviously incredible projects will be born out of it. We'll see what the ability of the tech really is beyond greed and transaction and all of that stuff that of course we always do first. But yeah, I feel like post purge, I'm feeling really excited about what we're going to create.
I really like that. And yeah, CryptoBows, RIP. So we try to make sure that every episode is super actionable for our community. And I'm sure you're going to send people down some great rabbit holes. Is there anywhere that you would send people as to like people to follow, communities to join, or like places that you've kind of either learned a lot or been inspired by?
I'd probably say Boys Club. Boys Club are a really amazing resource. They're really good at taking internet culture and using it as a material to break down super complicated Web3 terms and news. They have a really good Substack. So I love them for that. I love that when I'm learning about Web3 with them, I don't feel dumb. And it's given to me in a vehicle that I understand, that feels witty, it feels light. And that levity, I think, is really nice and healthy. We also, Steward and Boys Club, co-hosted a supper in New York last year, which was really nice. And we had like a fireside chat and like dispelled some myths. And so more of that, I think, more of those types of spaces. But definitely follow Boys Club. They're great.
I really like their stuff as well. And also their, like all of their design is all like stunning imagery. Just really cool. I love that. Thank you. Well, this has been a really good chat. So thank you, Lydia. And lastly, where can people find you?
Yeah. So at Lydia_Pang_ on Instagram. And my bio on Instagram has Morning, my company that I mentioned, the Creative Strategy Studio, and also Steward, the project that I just described. But also I think follow Go Outside, Steward Substack. I'm actually writing the next edition all about the importance of digital art, and Morning Substack, Burn After Reading, where we unpack more macro digital culture. So yeah, give those things a follow.
Thank you so much for your time.
Of course. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Women of Web3 podcast. If you like this episode, please do give us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from. It really helps more people find the show. Check out our website, womenofweb3.co, to find our talent collective you can apply to be part of, or post your Web3 vacancies on our jobs board. If you've got any questions or comments, just tweet us at womenofweb3co, and we'll see you next Thursday morning.